Hello, welcome to the show. We've had numerous transatlantic crises since Donald Trump returned to the White House, on trade and tariffs, on Ukraine, and perhaps the most surreal one of all, on Greenland. It's unprecedented. NATO's leading member, the US, openly expressing its territorial designs on another NATO member, Denmark. With each crisis, we've heard the same calls for Europe to wake up and take its destiny into its own hands. But more speeches won't make that happen. So how do the EU and NATO actually make this strategic shift? To discuss that, I'm joined by two MEPs. Lucia Iar is a Slovak MEP from Renew Europe. Hello, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Hello.
And I'm also here with Villy Søvndal, a Danish MEP from the Greens and a former foreign minister of Denmark. Hello to you as well.
Good.
And both of them are on the Security and Defence Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee, either as members or substitutes. Villy Søvndal, I'd like to start with you, being as you're a Dane, and just to get an idea of how you're feeling about all these insults against Denmark from Trump, you know, the denigration of the Danish armed forces and the fact that you lost 44 service members in Afghanistan. Do you feel this relationship is beyond repair?
I don't know, but for sure it's challenged in a way we never tried before. I had the good experience to be a foreign minister during the Barack Obama period. It was an easy time because we shared values, we wanted to do the same thing. We wanted strong international organizations. We wanted to follow international rules. We wanted a strong UN, etc., etc. He just took away all these things and exchanged it with one word, America first, meaning I don't want to have any restrictions in what I can do as long as it serves not my country, but myself. And that's a fully new situation.
Lucia, I'd like to talk to you about how Europe has handled this crisis. I mean, it's been said that Europe really did accommodate Trump on tariffs with, you know, accepting this unfavorable trade deal. Do you think Greenland is where Europe drew a red line, or is it still trying to accommodate or appease Trump in some way?
We have to, I think, think about the fact that the European Union has certain abilities to do, and then the member states are acting also differently because the foreign and especially security policies are still fully in hands of the member states. And if we want to move, we need to be all united, right? And we are often not. Often not, thanks to usually Mr. Orban from Hungary, but also sometimes because of my own country, Mr. and the Prime Minister, Mr. Fico, leading his governmental parties. I'm coming from the opposition, so I can be critical towards that. But I want to come back to your question, because European Union, I believe, acted very united, and this was exactly the tool how we, at the end of the day, went through it. Because we do not need to hang on every single word of on lips of Donald Trump. We have our own means. We have our antidote to act. And those are working on our common market, working on our common security, working on the energy. All these things are actually our weapons, our nukes that we can use towards Trump.
We'll come back to those very important elements. I want us first to take a listen to NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, because, of course, it's been said that NATO members on the European side should have been pushing back against Trump much more robustly in the Greenland crisis. But that is absolutely not the approach taken by Mark Rutte. Let's have a listen to him now.
He is the leader of the free world. If he is worried about something, hey, we'd better listen, because then he might have found something which is not good. And that is this issue of the Russians and the Chinese getting more and more access, because the sea lanes are opening up.
Villy Søvndal, when you hear this kind of talk, does it reflect the fact that Trump basically still has Europe over a barrel? Europe is still worried that he's going to pull out of Ukraine completely?
For sure.
Is that the basis of this kind of talk?
For sure. I think Mr. Rutte is afraid to be the Secretary General who lost NATO, where NATO was divided. And
I mean, it's kind of divided already, though, isn't it?
It is, and I think the Danish government learned the hard way that to impeach Trump and try to talk swiftly and soft does not work. And I think Europe is going to get to the same recognition sooner or later. That means that we have to prepare ourselves to be able to do it on our own, but both what defense is concerned, what technology is concerned, and what intelligence is concerned. And we do not have unlimited time. I think we should hurry up, because he does not disappear. He's going to be here for the next 3 years. Yeah. And if we do not use these 3 years to be stronger, then we are in a very difficult position.
Lucy, how do you think Mark Rutte handled this crisis? Was it good, or did he play his cards right or not?
He was very diplomatic, that's for sure. And since the beginning of the year, he visited the European Parliament twice. I was at both sessions with him. And when we talked among ourselves with the colleagues, other members of the Parliament, the very beginning, when he's presenting his speech, we were talking that it sounds like we had a U.S. ambassador visiting us in the Parliament. And I don't want... I think that many of the colleagues expressed this, because it literally sounds that the NATO became not 32 countries, but US plus 31. So I think Mr. Rutte should be also reflecting a very important part that the European countries are playing in NATO, that we understand the abilities that the US are giving in to the alliance. But at the same time, we have to think also vice versa, that it's working vice versa. Without the other members, without the strong European pillar, US will also not be able, neither in the security area nor in the economic one.
Yeah, on that strong European pillar, I wanted to ask you, because Mette Frederiksen, we saw some days ago in Paris, she stood next to President Macron and the Prime Minister of Greenland, and she said, this is from a formerly very strong Atlanticist country, said Europe must have the means to defend its principles. But how do you see that in practice? What does that mean for this European pillar?
That means that we have to speed up. We have to build up our own defense. We have to build up our own defense industry. We have to have our own intelligence. We have to be able to make our own big tech companies, European companies. And the quicker we do that, the better. Because I think what we learned now is to be dependent on an American president. We cannot rely on, we cannot trust him.
Yeah.
It's not a good position for Europe.
And Lucia, you were saying, you were mentioning the obstacle of a lack of unity. Is that really what's stopping integration in these fields that your colleague has just mentioned?
That's definitely one of the elements, but on the other hand, we also have a lot of projects, for instance, in defense area, in security area, where when we are talking, let's speed it up, it's again, in a way, on the governments of the member states. So, for instance, I am one of the reporters for the so-called defense omnibus, through which the European Commission, European Parliament is trying to speed up processes in order so that security company in any country, in Malta, in Slovakia, in France, is able to get the license to produce whatever defense product or whatever we're talking about in a much faster way. And for instance, European Commission is pushing for a much faster track. European Parliament is also on track. We are really pushing on the member states. But here we are starting trialogues, and the positions of the member states is not so ambitious. So yes, we hear that the Europeans are asking us to be ambitious. We want to build this sovereignty in defense, in security, in other areas. But guys, we also have to bang on the doors of the governments.
Yeah, but what you were saying about Europe doesn't have much time because we don't know what's around the corner, what Trump is going to do next or what his successor is going to do. But so how long then does it take for Europe to build up this sovereignty? I mean, is it like saying how long is a piece of string?
A few years.
Yeah.
We must be in place. Also because I was in Kiev when the US draw their support in March last year. And suddenly five times as many was killed in the cities because they had no time to get people secured. They had no time to do the anti-air strikes against the bombs coming in. And I think that day, all the political leaders of Europe and Canada and Turkey met in London, and the military chiefs met in Paris. Why did they do that? To discuss precisely what do we do when we cannot rely on US anymore, and the military chiefs, which kind of capacities do we have to reset to be able to do on our own? I say that I would like US to stay. I do not want to push them away, but I think it would be irresponsible to leave the European population in the hands of a president we cannot rely on.
There was one idea that was floated sort of at the height of the crisis, which came from the Spanish government, about creating a European army. It's obviously not a new concept, but what do you think of that idea? Is it a step too far for member states?
I hear a lot of discussions also in this parliament and also within our group, Renew Europe. And I think, first and foremost, if we're talking about the European pillar within NATO, let's focus on this. But I think we shouldn't be close to these ideas. We should think out of the box, because the ideas that are coming from Washington are certainly out of box.
For sure. Well, that's a good note to end this discussion on. Thank you so much to both of you, Lucia Jahr and Willy Sewendael. And that's all for this edition of Talking Europe. Glad you could join us here on France 24.